Hello and welcome to another amazing episode of IVM Likes. So today we have two people who are part of the IVM staff room and one extremely special guest. This was the special guest, guys. But let me introduce you to her. Before that, I will introduce you to the two staffers. One is a producer named Madhuri.
Hi, guys.
And another producer and social media executive.
Sure.
Antriksh.
Hey, yes. Social media executiveness happening here.
Social media strategist.
Strategist.
Not anymore. He's just hired a new strategist.
New strategist. Oh, good. So you'll be seeing a lot of new posts on IVM handle.
Yeah. Don't be sad. Antriksh still works with us.
Yeah. For now.
And we have the special guest who is the host of another amazing podcast on our network called Lit Nama. We have Lakshmi with us.
Yeah. Hi, guys. I think I'm the most, like, least excited person in the room because I'm intimidated by y'all sitting with paper and pen and, like, taking notes.
Yeah. There are also chances that this will go blank. We'll do nothing about it.
Okay. But the reason me and Madhuri have papers ready is because we know you are on the podcast this time, so we know that we have a lot of material that we need to write down when you start recommending.
Yeah, also, I'm pretty sure about that.
Also, you will notice that I don't have papers in front of me because I have a phone.
Okay,
digital human.
Yes,
Antriksh, you had to crack that joke.
Sorry, yes.
Okay, great.
So, you host Lit Nama on our network. How long has that been going on for now?
We have 5 episodes that are out. I think we started recording end of September, beginning of October, if I'm not wrong. And we put it out in December.
Okay.
So December 2019 is when we started.
And we've been getting really good feedbacks on our show.
Yeah, we keep reading.
Also, I wanted to say this, that every time I sit for a recording, I literally jot down a lot of things. And then I go back, I look at some YouTube videos and all, because she has a very contemporary outlook to literature. Includes all kinds of forms and new trends, be it spoken word, be it music performers. Even music is a part of a literary trend.
Yeah. And I think, for those
and
of
I
you...
And I haven't paid Madhuri to say this. Just putting it out there.
That is... I'm sure that we've been paid. No, I'm kidding. What I'm saying is that for those of you who don't know the podcast or the show, it's basically a show where Lakshmi interviews different artists from various fields, including music, including spoken word poets. And they basically talk about their creative process. They talk about a lot more, because creative process is also very personal. So, you know, if you want to know a lot about literature, you want to know a lot about a creative process of an artist and get inspired, please listen to that show.
We'll ask you more questions about Lit Nama in the second half. Let's begin with a round of recommendation, guys.
So excited. Okay, so Antriksh, we'll start with you.
Awesome.
What do you have to recommend?
Have you guys heard of a show called Curb Your Enthusiasm?
No.
Okay, so you heard of Seinfeld, right? Obviously.
Of course.
So Seinfeld, one of the greatest TV sitcoms that they say, has two creators. It had two creators.
Okay.
One is Jerry Seinfeld, of course, and one is Larry David. Larry David is also the person who George is based on, from Seinfeld. George Costanza, the character of George, is based on Larry David. That's Larry David in real life.
Oh. Whoa.
Imagine living, being that personality in real life.
Okay.
So after leaving Seinfeld, I think Larry David was on Seinfeld, wrote for Seinfeld till I think the 8th season, and I think the 7th season, and 8th and 9th season was Jerry's was the showrunner himself. He left this thing. Larry David left after 7th season, and he got a show on HBO.
Okay.
This time in front of the camera. It's called Curb Your Enthusiasm. Also, so Larry David is involved, and it's an HBO show, so you know there's quality already. You're almost assured quality, right? Now, so this show is about Larry David living as Larry David. Basically, just him. It's like a very meta show where it's just he living as himself and in Hollywood and going about his business in Hollywood.
Basically, they didn't get creative on the show.
No, it is the most creative thing ever. I know, you're just joking.
I think sometimes the most simplest of the things also turn out to be creative.
No,
like, literally.
Again, because this is the most ingenious show, because firstly, it does not have a script. Okay, there's a structure. You know, each episode, there's a structure to each episode. But there's literally no physical script on stage, on set, because everything, all the dialogue is improvised.
Okay.
From scratch. Yeah. Okay, that's amazing, firstly. So, and also, it's just about, it follows Larry around, and Larry is a very irritable guy.
Yeah.
Okay, like say someone is taking too long in front of him in the queue at an ice cream parlor, he'll get like, oh, just make a decision. He'll start shouting at them.
Oh,
he's the most pickiest, nitpicky. He's a jerk. He's literally a jerk. Okay,
but you can't help seeing people for who they are now.
Exactly. So that's literally George's character, if you imagine from Seinfeld, upped like just very raw, even raw out in the world, talking to everyone and not just these three people in this one apartment. So it's just that. And
sometimes,
it's the most amazing show.
I think sometimes I'd be very scared to look at actors in their real lives the way they are. Sometimes I think I like them for the roles they play, but I don't want to know beyond.
He's like Stooge. You know, when you think of the character of Stooge from the Christmas Carol.
Yeah,
that's Larry David in real life. So he's Jewish.
You realize that you're not selling it to us properly, right?
No, that's
this
not making
me not watch it.
This is the most hilarious in every recommendation. By the end of the recommendation, I am like, if you if you want to listen to an elevator pitch that goes wrong, listen to Antrish.
I concentrate on the parts that attract me too.
And also, he'll give you the context around it. I don't know what this guy sits and researches on.
Yeah.
I usually just research about the content, but he'll research around it. Ki us bande ne kya kiya, iske pehle uska kya kaam tha, and he'll give you all that little dots to join to it.
Why not?
So sometimes he goes on and on, and we have to stop him. This is what we did exactly right now.
Thanks, guys.
Now let's move on to Rutika. What do you have to recommend?
I have two photographers that I want to recommend.
Also I want to tell you that Rutika is a great photographer. She has clicked some amazing pictures and she's also written stories on it, like photo essays, which are up on Krantikali.
Okay,
that was recommendation.
Okay, go on. So there's this photographer that I stumbled upon all thanks to the other photographer. This other photographer is my friend. Her name is Revati Kulkarni, and she has a website, her own website, which I will try and hunt down right now. Sorry. It's a portfolio basically of her work, but you should totally check out her work. The work is just check out revatikulkarni.com. www.revatikulkarni.com. She clicks portraits. She's basically a documentary photographer, but she clicks a lot of portraits. She clicks a lot of travel photos, landscapes, and she's brilliant. And what I love about her, because I know her personally, this is where the artist and the actor part, I think, comes into play, because I feel like because I know her personally, I know her creative process. And I know that whenever she clicks a picture, she clicks it from the heart. And that's very hard to find in a lot of photographers, because if you see fashion photography, I think what she does is like there is this series on Saur that she's created. Saur is a village in Uttarakhand where she went for a 6-month fellowship, and she's clicked some pictures of the houses which have paintings on it. So Project Fuel did this thing in Saur where she they taught the they got a lot of painters there, and they created paintings on the walls. And so she's done some amazing work, and I would want everybody to check out her work. Her portfolio, it's a website called www.revatikulkarni.com. Through her I stumbled upon another amazing photographer called Anurag Banerjee. Okay, and that person is a person that I follow. Every time I go on Instagram, that's the first account I check. Anurag, as much as it feels like I'm stalking you, I'm not, I swear. I'm only stalking your work. just kidding. It's the first thing that I stumbled upon was this series that he did called Love in Bombay.
Okay,
which is about these couples that go to the sea and public places in Bombay, because let's face it, guys, we don't have too many places to make out in Bombay. You can't make out at home. So what he did is he clicked these a few voyeuristic images of couples in these public spaces. But what his intention was to show that love and the love in the corners and nooks and corners of the city is what love is truly about in the city, because it's so crowded and there is no privacy in Bombay, right? So that's a essay that I followed, and then I started following his work. Recently he clicked a lot of pictures of the protests, which are up on his Instagram account, so go check his account out and go and check his work
out. By same name,
Anurag Banerjee.
Okay,
yes,
cool. So that was Rutika's recommendation.
What is yours?
Okay, I'm going to recommend a book. Okay. It's called Girl, Woman and Other.
See, this is why we bond. just putting it out there. She just told my recommendation straight out of my hand.
Wow, okay. You're going to recommend that?
Yeah, I just booked a copy like online.
It's the most amazing book that you're going to read. Yeah. I think I've never enjoyed reading any book so much after reading Mahashweta Devi. Her stories really touched me because I thought this is a person who's writing not per se, not that other writers write per se, but also something you're so actively involved in.
Yeah.
Not just looking at it and talking about it, but this is my life that way. So she writes about all kinds of women. The title is called Girl, Woman and Other. Who would you call other? If you're talking about a girl or a woman's perspective, who is this other? I want to ask you, who do you think is the other when I say girl, woman?
And everyone else, I think.
Who does that everyone else include when I say
society?
Other?
Society?
Yeah.
That other could be someone from the queer community. That other could be someone who's a refugee, who's an immigrant.
Yeah.
Her stories are based on black women in England, in London. So are they immigrants? Are they living there as refugees? Or have they always lived there but they are treated differently? Talks about sexism, racism. Of course, those are the obvious topics. But the most amazing thing is it covers decades of women. So the women you see in the first part, every chapter starts with a woman's name. Okay. So I think that maybe they're very separate stories, but all the stories
12 characters. They're 12 in the characters. Book, yeah.
And you think that these are very not disconnected stories, but actually someone turns out to be someone's daughter, someone turns out to be someone's granny or a friend or a neighbor, and that way they are connected.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
So you have seen this one character appear in the first story, maybe for a very little bit way, but that character stayed with you because of the way it is talked about. And then you have a whole chapter dedicated to that character.
No.
I just couldn't keep that book down. It's the most amazing thing I've read in 2020. And I'm glad to have started it that way.
That's so cool.
I'm sorry that I'm going to like, but I've been talking to Revati about this whole idea of universal love, because there are days when you find it very hard to believe that a concept like universal love exists, because we're all connected. But I feel like sometimes there are some days where I'm like, are we really connected? Do we really feel each other's emotions? Except for when you're reading a book, because then you completely forget your sense of self and you get into being or embodying another character within the book or the writer's head. But I've really, I think I'm in that process where I'm still trying to figure out if this idea of Imagine and John Lennon's idea of universal love still exists sometimes, you know.
I think this thought occurred to me when I was watching Sex Education, the recent season, right? So that entire bit, like everybody's talking about on social media, that all the girls coming together to help Amy out. I think you haven't watched this episode yet.
I've seen it.
So the idea that so many women across the globe who are also watching could relate to something those seven girls are going through.
Right. Yeah.
So that's not just diversity for the namesake.
Yeah.
And then you see how every single woman has a different encounter with their culture, their social position, and then they're all coming together. So it's a very telling thing, right? So I was thinking about how more than love, trauma binds us together.
True.
That's so true.
Like Sex Education does this very well. Like in the first season, they talked about abortion. They had a scene, they had an episode covering abortion and the trauma of abortion. And there are multiple women at the abortion clinic.
Correct.
And what they're bonding going together, through. Bonding together because of that. That was pretty well done.
And this time what they showed, it's not only in that context, the country or the place that they have chosen. All of us, when we go for our night outs and all, so many times have we talked about sexual abuse in some or the other way. And we all bond over those incidents and we feel for each other. That is what that episode was about.
After watching that episode, I was a little uncomfortable because you know, you realize that every woman you pass on the street every single day, trauma is the one thing that binds you with that other person. Also with the protests, right? So when you go to a protest, it's not that you know the other person, but you're still going to help them out.
In fact, the funny part is that during one of the protests, somebody, sorry, I'm just interjecting, but somebody, we were at the protest and somebody was like, oh, this is like a festival because everybody's gathered here. And this one woman who was right in front of me is like, turned back and she's like, this is not a festival, guys. But I'm like, no, but it does celebrate a feeling of community because...
And I really like the idea of calling it a festival. I remember going, of course, protests are different and pride walks are different. But I had this question to this person and I asked her ki log bolte hain ki aap shaadi ki tarah kyun nach rahe ho aur ye sab pride walk ka kya zarurat hai. So this person, she responded ki aap jab apni baraten nikalte ho to hum aapko kuch kehte hain, ye hamari barat hai, hum nachenge. So even when we are protesting, the idea is to protest and tell them we do not need this, but the idea is also to celebrate that we can come together and raise a voice together.
I mean, we all came together, but what bound us together was, say, when you listen to Hum Kagaz Nahi Dikhayenge or Hum Dekhenge.
Hum Dekhenge.
Like, you've seen crowds sing that song together and it's offbeat, off-key, but it is still so beautiful. So I feel like instead of universal love, right now we're inching towards like universal trauma in some weird sense, right?
She's right,
I mean, even if you're talking to somebody who says not from India, is it from other state of like other country or somewhere else, you still know that there's something traumatic that's happening in that place. And that ties you up with the other person, because you're like, hey, listen, we both know how it is to stay in a fascist regime. So we both know how to feel sad or how to emote about things.
But
so,
taking from what you said, that's why this whole thing about universal love came to me, because there are times where I fight with my own family about politics.
Correct.
Okay?
All the time.
And so there are those days when I'm like, like with Refti, she told me recently she had a fight with someone. And she was telling me that hatred is so easy as a choice. Right? And so we all sometimes, not all of us, but there is a divisive force that still divides us. And so I am, some days I am, I also tell myself it's okay to sometimes not believe in the idea of something that binds us, because there are days when you just want to be a skeptic. You know, you just want to be like, haan, theek hai, you don't understand what I'm going through. I don't understand. But there are those days when you want to listen to your family and listen to why they are so brainwashed about these things. You know, so there is that... there is that gray line.
To be very honest, I ran into a situation like this, like with my father, because my father is not really anti anything but anti me, because he thinks like the youth is being brainwashed into believing into something else. But then, you know, the idea of divisiveness that you're talking about, it's so rampant that it doesn't need to be like a anti-Congress, anti-BJP situation as well. It's in your everyday life. Like if you take a local train, you will see how the moment somebody steps in, people judge them according to their attire, clothes, behavior, and their behavior immediately changes. So like, for example, if somebody is entering into the first class compartment, if you feel that that person doesn't deserve to be in the first class, women ask them to get down straight up.
Oh my God, I've seen, I just hate straight it. And you know how they judge that on the basis of your clothes. If you're wearing your sari a certain way, even your skin color, if you look a certain way, your hair is
haywire. If you don't look
like
posh, then they'll be like, okay, you don't deserve the first class. I mean, divisiveness doesn't have to get to... To be very honest, that's what the political parties are playing us all with. Like, they're playing us like a fiddle, because they know we have deep-rooted hatred for each other.
Not just that, they will tap on
them. Can I tell you? Can I tell you something? Today only we recorded. Sorry to bring this in, but I also have a show, Top Retails, where I record stories, and this is what I'm trying to do with stories when I talk about women. So whenever I talked about it on other levels, it would be women like me. But the whole idea was, it is not only women like me who are woke, but there's so many little incidences that I want to point at and talk about caste and class. So today we recorded a story. The whole idea is that of a button. And through that button, we are looking at a tailor's life. A woman who chooses to be a tailor aur ghar pe silai kar rahi hai because she has to feed three people in her family. So what would it be for her to send her daughter away? And this is what I've found, that my mother is more open-minded than my father. So I've always found women changing more according to the circumstances. Even about politics today, I fight a lot with my father. He's not ready to change his perspective, mindset, but my mother has, she'll be listening to me intently. She'll be like, I can give it a thought.
On the other hand, what scares me about my mother is she's completely apolitical. She likes sub politicians. I'm like, have an opinion.
This reminds me of the recommendation that I was going to give.
Tell us.
Have you watched the show called One Day at a Time?
Oh yes, I love that show.
One Day at a Time is a beautiful show.
Oh my God,
it's very relevant. I don't know how this segue just came down to this, but it's a story of a three generation Latina family staying in America. So there's a mother, Lydia. There's a daughter, Penelope, and Penelope's daughter, Elena. Elena is queer. Penelope is a ex military woman, and she has a lot of trauma from that. And Lydia is, of course, somebody who has escaped Cuba, and she is here as an immigrant. And they're just trying to figure out their lives in American society, and mm-hmm. they're trying to see how society treats people, because they're lying at this very, very sensitive intersection, right? So they mm-hmm. are like, there's race, there's class, because they're not ideally how you define rich. All of them are working for a living. Then they have their own cultures that are at contradiction with everybody else. And they have this, you don't even need to think about the larger context to see how this is different, because they have this neighbor who's uber rich, who owns the whole goddamn building. Okay,
but he's very cute.
He's very cute.
I mean, and that gives him a leeway, you know.
Yeah. Also, the neighbor wants to be a part of the family.
Always. Yes. That's the weirdest thing, right? Because it was also a commentary on the American society at the same time. It's not just a commentary about how the Latinas are living their life. They have a young son as well in the family. And there are issues like anxiety. There are issues like
depression.
Depression. And you know, the best part was, I think somewhere where Lydia, so the grandmother gets to know that the daughter is queer, right? The granddaughter is queer. And she straight up says that, I don't like boys. And it's, I think, a 30-second dialogue where Lydia talks to herself that God says, love everyone. Who am I to go against God? So I love you. And it's so simple. And she's immediately accepted her granddaughter. And I think I just cried at that point, because the amount of struggle that culturally a person belonging from a community that's not white, you know, or like a majoritarian community would go through, is just such a simple logic as to why you need to accept everybody who's around you.
Like when the door, when the granddaughter was coming out to her grandmother, well, did she think a lot before that? Like, should I?
She, of course, she was like,
she was terrified.
She was terrified.
And the grandmother was like, this in 30 seconds.
She
was
30 seconds. I really like that, how it breaks the stereotype that grandmothers or your mother-in-laws and all, you always show them as negative, one-colored people. I really don't like
Lydia's
that
idea. Lydia is very in touch with her sexuality. Lydia is out there. I mean, you can't miss Lydia in the room when you see her.
No, and in fact, Lydia actually turned me on. There were days where when, okay, so there is the, it starts the show sometimes on certain episodes start with Lydia
Dancing,
making coffee,
and making coffee,
making breakfast.
And the way she would open the drapes.
The drapes. I'm like, I want to tap that ass.
And I also loved her love angle wala jo life hai. I really loved that, because platonic love in a way.
Exactly.
But very beautifully shown that for two people to be together, why is marriage always a structure? She questions that old woman, she just has a boyfriend and like, nahi, haan, theek hai.
And it's just, it's so, it's normally showing them as normal people. It's not, for example, you see all of these shows where Latinas are over-sexualized, right? I mean, for example, when you watch Modern Family also, as much as I love her character, I'm like, why does she always have to scream? Like, Sophia doesn't have to always be like, in your face. You don't need that. You need normal human characters represented in a way, because it's just that show changes a lot of things as how you look at society. Which Schneider, the white neighbor, he is rich. He is. He has everything that he requires. He has like cabinet full of snow globes for some goddamn reason. And, like, but he does not feel included, because he doesn't have a family. He comes from a broken household and he's been neglected as a child. And then he sees this Latina family who's trying to make ends meet, and he feels home. And they welcome him.
And also, it's a commentary on isolation that becomes an intrinsic part of the American way of living.
Why only American way of living? I think it's our way of living today as well.
Now we haven't quite reached
moving there. But also, we are critiquing that with that intensity. I think then that should leave things open and keep some room for changes.
So I think that's one show that I would want everybody to watch. It is on Netflix. The third season is going to come out soon, but
no, I think this, the three seasons are already out. There are three seasons.
It's not on Netflix though, the third one.
No, it's there, just check. No, there are three seasons.
Oh, and the fourth one is going on.
I don't know on if pop. It is going to come out, because pop. After third season, after third season, Netflix ne band kar diya ki hum aage ka nahi dikhayenge. I was
actually
really
upset about
that.
One very interesting footnote to that, because people across the world just went like, save Odat, and they created an entire movement until, and it kept going on and on and on until somebody actually picked it up. So they fought that fight.
So they're coming out with fourth season. I'm looking
forward
to that.
The third is on Netflix.
The third is there.
I don't know where the fourth season is though.
The fourth season will be on Pop. It's about to release, if I'm not wrong.
Okay guys, let's look out for the fourth season, and maybe we'll have Lakshmi back in the studio to discuss fourth season with us.
We should.
If you enjoyed the way she talks about this stuff, I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy Litnama, because it is even more intense than this.
True.
Nice.
Great. So I think we should now take a break and yeah. we should come back.
Let's just quickly go down what everyone recommended.
Yes.
Madhuri, what do you recommend?
I recommended a book, Girl, Woman, Another, which we are going to love, by the way. It's these kind of stories that connect women together.
Lakshmi, what did you recommend?
I recommended One Day at a Time. It's on Netflix and you can watch 3 seasons. It's all live and it's again women bonding with women.
Yeah.
Nice.
Antriksh, what did you recommend?
I recommended Curvy Enthusiasm. It's an HBO show. And I also forgot to mention, they have a Seinfeld reunion season. An entire season is a Seinfeld reunion season in the 7th season of the show.
Great.
So please check that out. Yeah.
Yes. And I recommended 2 photographers and their work, Revati Kulkarni and Anurag Banerjee. So please check them out.
Okay guys, see you on the other side of the break.
Thank you.
Welcome guys to the other side of the break. With me in the studio, I have Lakshmi, who is also the host of Litnama. We have Rutika, we have me, and Antariksh is replaced by another producer, and you would have guessed him by his laugh. A bus.
Oh, hi. Yes.
Yeah, we didn't like Antriksh's laugh, so we
No, I think it was the joke that got him kicked off.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, true. Okay, Lakshmi, so I have a question for you.
Okay.
On Litnama, you talk about contemporary literary trends. So I want you to elaborate on these literary trends that you think of, and also what is your understanding of a literary text?
Wow, that's like a 15 mark answer straight up.
I literally felt that literature ke exam mein ye question pucha hai.
Yep, this is what my nightmares are made up of. But the reason why I also started looking at contemporary literary trends, to be very honest, is I hated studying classics. So one of those people who hates classics.
Welcome to the club.
Like, I get it, George Eliot. You're talking about two characters who are like, the reference is Mill on the Floss here, of course, but like in the end, it's sloppy writing. So I love Pride and Prejudice as a concept, but I will
just
not.
You just dissed George Eliot.
Yep, I just did. I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but like.
No, I don't think. I think a lot of us relate with you today. Even my first literary text that I read in my literary class was Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
I couldn't relate with it at all. And I thought, achha, literature ye hai. I don't think I'll enjoy it so much till I picked up some Indian authors, Afro-American authors.
Yeah,
and
I was just going to come to that, right? Because. Yeah. I think part reason why I hate classics is because A, I cannot relate to it. I don't come up from an upbringing that has had a influence of the English lifestyle or, you know, culturally. I don't have grandparents who fought at the freedom struggle who can talk about the British culture to me, or just any possible influence. I have an influence of Marathi stories at home. I've grown up listening to Tamil stories, and I don't find those characters. I don't find people who look like me, who talk like me in those books. So I did not really have an entry to the text. And then I started picking up contemporary books. So I've read all of Chetan Bhagat. I'm not ashamed to admit it, because somewhere I was looking at people who look like people around me. Even if I'm not going to say that that's me, but I get it. Like, people like this exist. I don't know somebody who has like 5 daughters who are wearing ball gowns all the bloody time and like covering tables and their feet. I mean, I love Jane Austen and I love her work, but it's not just my cup of tea. So when I say contemporary literary trends, I'm just like, what are you and I liking to read? Where are we seeing people that are not just British, right? Where are we looking at, even if we're looking at British people, not all of them wear ball gowns anymore. Not all of them have high tees. So where are these people actually situated?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that all of classic fiction is so white. Even if it's like, even if you read something like a Tarzan or some, you know, Edgar Rice Burroughs, you can very well sense the writer almost describing the tribes as savages, or looking down at them, or just that these are uncivilized people just because they haven't had the influence of the British influence on them. So a lot of that,
it's like an explanation for colonialism all the time,
an apology.
An apology, and also trying to tell you that how we have always been on the right side. And also, but there's one thing that I would like to add to this. Having read classics and having read so many other genres really exposed me to the kinds of writings that can exist. And then that made me capable to critique it and have my own form. If I had not known it in the first place, I don't think I would have a structure to critique it or even come up with my own forms.
So, two things here. One was about what you said, Madhuri, that that's what I said, that since I read classics, I knew what I don't want to read. Had I never read classics, I wouldn't have known. So now I know better. So now when I'm buying books, I don't think I even edge towards the classic section, because I've had enough from every era in my syllabus. I don't want more. At the same time, about the savages and theatre aspect, let's not go that far behind. There's a recent article in The Guardian about the Jaipur Literature Festival. This is another distraction. That article talks about how India doesn't have a culture of reading and writing, so it's important for festivals to give that platform. Bullshit. I call bullshit on that, because I think we are one of the most richest literary trends. One of the very fun facts, like, I just like to put it out there. Queer literature. When we talk about queer literature, it's one of the contemporary trends. Again, queer literature is not really contemporary to India. I was doing my research and I found out that there's a book dated like 1924 that talks about homoeroticism. There are books written in the 1930s that actually are memoirs about a Dalit queer person who is attracted to this one. You've all heard of Nirala, right? The poet, the Hindi poet.
So this text,
it's called A Life Misspent, like, in translation. It's called Kulli Bhat.
Okay.
Basically, this person, Kulli Bhat, he was attracted to, it's Bhat or Bhat, I'm not sure. I read it in translation only. He was attracted to Nirala all his life, and he told him straight up, like, hey, listen, I'm attracted to you. And Nirala wrote an entire memoir about it.
Wow.
So, we don't, like, people think that queer literature is a very westernized idea, that it has just come and corrupted Indian minds. But this always existed. Like, you just need to open your eyes and look around from...
Also, have you read The Cobalt Blue by...
Sachin Kundalkar.
I mean, it's a Maharashtrian household that it's
in Pune. It's in a very Brahmanical Pune that Sachin Kundalkar
is talking. It's like a brother and a sister. There's a paying guest that comes to stay in their house. And both the brother and the sister get attracted to the paying guest. Wow. And I think when I read that book, I realized I could connect with so many of these aspects of the Maharashtrian household and the kind of traditions that the kind of traditions that you come from.
Correct.
So I think, but you know, that's the worst part, that I think all my teenage life I felt like all the fantasy characters, like all those men that I would fantasize about in my dreams, were all white men. And that realization struck me so hard that I realized that I need to start edging towards.
And it's not that you didn't have black people in classics, right? Like, you have Braithwaite's To Serve With Love. It's another classic that's unputdownable. But again, they categorize it as black fiction or black classics. They're not let... So they're gatekeeping even the idea of, fiction, like classic fiction. They're not going to tell you that they're equal. There are so many black authors who are writing. Like, when you say Toni Morrison today, Toni Morrison is a figure that is beyond... The limitations of genre, but you will still like, oh, black author Toni Morrison. I'm like, great, assertion of identity, if people are reclaiming it, is great. It's like black people during the Harlem Renaissance were like, no, we want to be known as black individuals, but the way you say it also can be heard by people. People think like, we don't get it. When you say Indian art, I'm a fan of Indian art. I know that you're a fan of like exotic Indian art you can buy in like a Fab India. You're not going to go to the actual potter or the ceramic person who's actually painting it somewhere else. I mean, I don't understand, because exoticization in literature is another huge, like, I can make an entire series out of it as an episode content.
You know, I would really like to go back to this idea. When you say art, you can go to Fab India or you can go to a potter. The same thing has happened to the literature. So we had this paper called Indian Literature, and the first day a professor comes to the class and she asks us, how old do you think India is? And we're like, India to bahut purana hai, Bharat to kab se aaya. She said, no, it's only as old as your independence. It wasn't called India. The whole configuration of India is very new. So imagine the literary, it is again a very Western idea. So when you go back to Indian literature, you're only thinking of these few years. Correct. Whereas our literary traditions were not so much in the written form. There was music, there is folk art. So when I say Indian literature, it's not just Indian authors who are writing per se, but they're performing, they are artists. Correct. They are making pots and this and that. Everything should be called.
We've also written on temple walls. We've left nothing behind. Like, everywhere you look around. And that's what I say, right? So when I'm even saying that contemporary literary trends, also I'm classifying something that is not contemporary. I mean, definition always works on exclusion, right? So I want to talk about all things Indian literature, because Indian literature ka perception, this is literature, what we're creating right now, what we're talking about, is a good reference point for somebody who's, say, writing a paper on how do podcasts, like, I'm the one who's going to write this paper, by the way. I am presenting this at a conference, but, like, I'm trying to look at how do Indian podcasts are looking at literature. How are we talking about literature and things like that? So I think that's the motivation behind pushing for. So I'm just going to tell you an incident that happened this morning. I was talking to a class and I asked them, how many of you read? This was a TY Lit class. They rolled their eyes at me. I was like, of course. Then I asked them, how many of you read Indian literature? Then some hands went down. Then I was like, how many of you read Indian literature that's not originally written in English?
Yeah.
There are 5 people who have read Marathi literature in translation. Most of them have read Cobalt Blue and other quote-unquote famous books.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why do we choose to... Also, academia plays a huge role in this, right? Because your literature courses are gatekeeping Indian books behind. Who are you reading? Like, you read an Arundhati Roy, you read an Amitav Ghosh, but are they your everything?
But actually now the sphere of literature is changing because there are a lot of publications that are coming up with some really good...
Yeah, they are, but I still think they are... I mean, only someone who reads a lot would be able to find them. I'll give an example, okay? Most bookstores you see around, at least in Bombay, you have your general fiction A to Z, which will have all the American and British and African authors. Yeah. You have your science fiction and fantasy section. You have your romance section. And then Indian fiction is one rack where all of these genres, but if they are written by an Indian author, they will be slotted in this one rack, right? So if there's an Indian fantasy author, their book does not go on the fantasy rack, it goes in the Indian fiction rack, right? So if someone who likes reading fantasy is less able to discover that book by an Indian fantasy author, because maybe they don't check out the Indian fiction rack, they only check out the fantasy where they find the same George R.R. Martin and who's the Lord of the Rings guy, J.R.R. Tolkien, all these abbreviated names. So I think that I don't know where the marketing aspect of it also plays a part. I'm a little confused about this because so when you talk about literary trends, right? So traditionally you have the Vikram Seths and the Amitav Ghoshes, like you talk, who speak in a certain way, who have an anglicized tone to their quote-unquote voice. Have we moved on from that, and do we really have like Indian writing superstars now who are born and bred in India, who write books about Indian people and day-to-day Indian life? You mentioned Chetan Bhagat, and we can argue about that, but sure, he's the one literary superstar who's kind of broken out in the last 10-15 years. So where does it stand now? I mean, are you more prone to find an Indian Stephen King, or the very fact that I'm even referring to Indian that Stephen as a King, you know, so how do we break through that and just be like, you know, this is an Indian writer, he's written Indian stories, and this as cool as any other book written from any other part of the world?
Okay, so this is a very, very political response that I'm going to give, but that's the thing, right? So I publicly say I diss a lot about Chetan Bhagat.
Okay.
Like, I'm going to admit that on mic, but one thing that man has done is made people read. And looking at his sales, you realize there is such a huge market that demands for literature. But that's the thing, right? Who are we writing for? All these people, all your Amitav Ghoshes and your Vikram Seths, are still writing for people who've been reading for years.
Right.
I mean, from a literature class, I will go, and if I see a copy of Suitable Boy, I will pick it up.
Right.
But if you, not a literature student, will go and look at you'll be like, this is such a huge book, I will not read it. We are not making our literature palpable enough for the younger audiences to pick up. My sister, like, my house is full of books. There is no room in my house that does not have books on some shelf or the other. My sister does not like to read. She's just like, I don't understand your literature. She will read her own crime stories, theories, crime theories, fiction, stuff like that. She's like, because I don't understand what you are trying to say through like a very complicated piece of fiction.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is very fair, because when she's reading her Ayn Rankin or Harlan Coben, who are mass producing books like nobody's business, she is okay with it because it's written in a simple, lucid language for people to understand. When it comes to translations, books are pricey, right? So when you're looking at Indian novels, it's also because the demand, the supply, the circulation, the marketing, these books are generally priced between 500 to 700, like the really top shelf ones. But now with Speaking Tiger coming in the picture, they are pricing books down to 399, 400, things like that. So now your Jerry Pinto is flying,
right?
Because his books are accessible, affordable, understandable, because like you said, Sachin Kundalkar's character, like the characters in the book, you could relate to them because they come from a Marathi household. You find an instant connection with them. When you're reading a postmodern narrative on like in Anuradhati Roy, you will not relate to it because it's very broken. I've met so many people who couldn't move past the first two chapters of, say, Midnight's Children, or the first two chapters of, say, God of Small Things, because they're like, this is too complex. I don't understand. Why can't you say a story like A, B, C, D? So then how are we defining our audience? Like, you go to literature festivals, right? You will see that as a student, when you walk into a literature festival for the first time, but if you don't come from the heart of the city where you're quote-unquote cultured and brought up, there is such a huge bias you have to face. Because if you go to Tata Lit Live, it's a brilliant festival, it's brilliantly programmed, nothing on the organizers, but it's the audience that decides the elitism of the room. You will run into people who are like, who read compendiums after compendiums, and if you go and say that I've read one book of Amitav Ghosh, they'll be like, oh, you haven't read this, you haven't read that. And I mean, to be very honest, nobody's ever going to be qualified to speak enough about literature, because you can't read everything that's on the face of this earth.
No, also another thing adding to this is because I went to the first edition of the Kumaon Literary Fest that happened, okay? And I was like, okay, I'm going to spend money, I'm going to go, I'm going to whatever. I was in that top. And then I reached there and I realized all of these authors are from Bombay, Delhi. And they are not very few authors that
from the Northeast.
From the Northeast.
And you might have heard of Esterine Kire.
Yes.
That's right, right? See, they tokenize a few authors from regions. Like, to be very honest, if anybody from the organizing team of Tata Lit Fest, Times Lit, like, I'm going to be unemployed after this maybe, because I generally go around hosting at these festivals. But if you're listening, listen, I know you love Shashi Tharoor, but get over it. I am tired of seeing that man on the Great Debate panel but year after year.
Wouldn't their argument be he's the one who, he's the guy who brings in the crowds? I mean, people
come. To be
very
honest, Mumbai has now had enough of him.
Sure, I mean,
I would love for him to go to the other regional festivals. If there's a Nagpur Lit Fest happening, and if you can get a Shashi Tharoor to go there, nothing like it. But I mean, look at how you're programming these places as well, right? I mean, there's a there's another podcast that has just come out. It's called Lit Pickers. It's by Dipanjana and wow, I'm forgetting the other woman's name. She's also brilliant. I read her articles in the Supriya. So both of them are talking about their first episode is about Lit Fest and the politics of Lit Fest and. They're absolutely correct as to what are you selling at a Lit Fest. So now we saw in Jaipur, when people were protesting, they were kicked out and thrashed out of the festival. Where does your dissent lie? That makes me question, right? So you want to talk about dissent only when it's between the pages.
But not in form on the street.
I get it that there are other, there's another side to the argument that it was not safe to the attendees,
I mean,
and all of
I
that.
I saw those videos and my instant reaction was of anger. I mean, like, you talk about these are the very people who are talking about dissent. But I just think that would have happened anywhere in the world. If there was a literary festival happening in the US, I'm sure the authorities would have escorted the protesters out. Either you give them a specific space within the the literary grounds to be like, this is your space, you can do whatever you want.
They would be allowed even if they'd ask for permission.
No,
to think that
this is a hypothetical situation, right? If they were given that particular space to protest and they were protesting there, and then the action would have been taken, I would have been like, that's wrong. In the middle of the literary festival, you start chanting slogans and creating you know, this sort of quote unquote disturbance, and you're escorted out of the premises. I kind of see the logic in that. Now, the speakers not mentioning that or
exactly
saying that,
my point. I was just
that was that I think is an issue. That you are the forebearers.
This is not just JLF in 1 year. This has happened year after year. Like this one time I was at JLF as a student and I was so excited for the Taslima Nasreen session. She didn't show up because she was not allowed to enter the festival.
The whole Salman Rushdie incident also happened.
You want to make them make idols out of them. You want to put people on the pedestal. But you are refusing to look at their reality. Like, that's my fundamental issue with Indian literature and Indian literary spaces as well. Right now, it's all these emerging publishers who are putting in all the effort and bringing, like, Harper is doing some brilliant job with Harper Perennial, Speaking Tiger, Eka. These are giving voices in the real sense. Because you calling somebody as a token Dalit person on the panel is not the solution to your problems. Are you aware? Like, what are you as a stakeholder in the literary scene? If I am earning 1 lakh rupees a month of whatever I'm doing, how much am I giving back to the system? Am I enabling somebody else to be able to write? Are you ready to share your contacts if somebody comes up with a brilliant story to you? Are you open to say that, hey, listen, I'm going to put you in touch with my publisher, you should get this out? If you are a famous author, are you putting the pressure to, like, make these narratives heard? But are you enjoying the fact that you get to sit on the main stage every single time?
Yeah, I think that's a very important question to ask.
It's every, see, I get it, there are political choices. I also do events, so I understand that getting X person brings you money. But I know you have money. Now what do you want?
No, also, I think here the curation also matters.
Correct.
When in that lineup you have, like, so many authors, like 12 authors. Out of 12, if you have 6 authors that are, you know, regional authors. It actually really makes a difference, because you discover so many authors.
But the thing is, also the whole idea of authors, who is the person that you allow to speak? Is it only defined by age? Is it because I come from certain background or I speak a certain way? I don't know, how do you decide that? So recently for Hyderabad Literary Fest, I have this storyteller friend. She's very famous, Deepa Kiran. Okay. So she is the one who curates it. And she asked me if I can come and perform one of my stories. She liked my stories. But I'm not asking for being paid. I don't know what is the stage where you say all those things, but she said, ki, we don't have so much funding. I said, not at all a problem, but because I have to fly from Mumbai, you just arrange for my travel. So then I was informed that as a fest together, they don't have funding for all those things. And then I took suggestion from my professors and all, and they said, no, we go to LitFest and all. This is the most basic thing that they need to do. Then this is exploitation, so you shouldn't go there.
I understand that festivals don't have funds. It's not a lie. With the economy, quote-unquote, flourishing around us, they don't have money.
That was sarcastic, guys.
I get it. I'm not a bhakt guy. I'm sorry. Sorry to disappoint you all, but like...
And there's one, just one thing that I want to add to your narratives when you say, ki Indian literature kya hai, who is our target audience and all. So for that, Zuban, I've always loved their work.
Zuban is brilliant.
What I love the most is the anthologies. So what they do is not just one writer who speaks from a certain position or perspective, but there's this one book called Drawing the Line. So you have northeast narratives of all seven those sister states. Sister states, and different stories, and they are all women. So you carry multiple identities on you, and there is intersection, one region talking to the other. So need not be with that famous author wala jo title hai, but your story, my story, everyone's story comes together in that book. I really like that idea of shared authorship.
About Indian novels, I've been this is also another PR plug, and I should be ashamed of myself. But like, I've been interning with this place called Indian Novels Collective, which is why I've been reading up a lot about Indian literature these days. So I read this New Yorker article about Perumal Murugan, right? Perumal Murugan's book, One Part Woman, it's a trilogy actually now. It had come out, and he received a lot of political criticism to a point where he went online and declared that Perumal Murugan, the author, is now dead. I will only live as Perumal Murugan, the professor. He was ostracized from his community. He was forced to move to Chennai with his entire family, and he stopped writing for a brief period of time. But now he's back with more books. He's writing. He's actively there on your shelves. But is that all that you know about Tamil literature? Because to be honest, I did. That's all that I knew about Tamil literature. I heard Perumal Murugan. I heard Salma. I heard a few names here and there. And I didn't even try to look for more. And that's the situation, right? Because accessibility becomes a huge issue. When I started interning, I looked at Marathi literature. In that sense, Marathi literature is now gaining popularity because it's more or less set in Mumbai. These stories revolve around Mumbai, Pune, where a lot of these publication houses are also setting up their stores. So now they are, you know, extending a hand and pushing these narratives forward. We need to collectively, as a literary space, facilitate more in this, right? Because, for example, Mahashweta Devi used to get a lot of flack for writing about the tribals, writing about the Dalit individuals. But back in the day when Mahashweta Devi was writing, somebody had to do the job. Somebody had to pick up the parents, dad, start writing, because Manoranjan Bepari, who's another Dalit author from, I think he's from Orissa or Bengal, I'm not sure. Apologies for that. But he has a book called There's Gunpowder in the Air. And he's written about his own Naxalbari incident and how he was jailed. He was illiterate and then he learned how to read and write in the jail. And he came out with his own narrative. And Mahashweta Devi met him and said, you should start writing for my new weekly called Bartika. That's where this man started writing. Today he has two published books out there. And it's in translation. He was also shortlisted for the JCB prize this year. And that prize is life changing. It's 25 lakh rupees. I mean, if an author gets that much amount of money, it changes everything for them. I like how the JCB prize is putting a lot of pressure on looking at translations, looking at margins, looking at other identities than just your top five crossword book list, you know, toppers on that sort. But that being said, he had come to speak at the Timeslit Fest last year. He was brilliant, but everybody assumed that that crowd was empty. There were like two rows of people to listen to him. And I swear to God, we didn't even realize how the time went past until I was hosting that stage for that time, and the moderator for the next session was like, hey, listen, we're already 15 minutes late for our session, but we don't mind pushing it because he's brilliant, and let him talk. His first line was, main chor hoon, main chor tha, aur ab main shabd churata hoon. And from there to him actually closing down, to people actually complaining, why would we let him stop? Is that we don't give them the opportunity. And there's this them and us kind of narrative in literature a lot.
Which is very apparent at literature festivals.
Very apparent.
Just like the book we said, Girl, Woman and Other. That's what it's all about.
I mean, othering comes very naturally to all of us, right? Like, for example, people want Hindi to be the only language. But it's such a shame that these people also don't read in Hindi, write in Hindi, don't know the origins of Hindi.
Right,
Hindi doesn't exist as it was for like thousands of years. You have like 10,000 other dialects that make Hindi what it is. How do you define one Hindi? Do you want everybody to study Hindustani? Do you want them to learn Maithili? Do you want them to learn Dogri? What language do you think? And why do you want a language dominance in literature becomes another argument. On the other side of it is you're blatantly ignoring people who are writing in Hindi. Where are your bestsellers? Where are your Hindi literatures in translation? Why are, if you want Hindi to be a national language, why are you not pushing its literature? Because language cannot sustain on itself. Ecosystem is pushed only through literature. And how are you going to then give me the vocabulary? Like if I'm, whatever words I've used today in this entire episode, I've read them somewhere, I've picked them up from there, and now we are using it. It's, that's how we make our vocabulary. Why do people think Mumbai Hindi is corrupt? Because we pick up those language, those slangs from everywhere else. And you know, also this pidgin Hindi that we talk in Mumbai, it's a dialect of Hindi. You can't ban it. You can't be like, this is not Hindi.
This is not Shuddh Hindi.
Shuddh Hindi.
I don't think there's any Shuddh. There's no longer any Shuddh Hindi. And also our Hindi has a lot of spoken quality, because we are not even reading those words being written down. I do not want to stick to the idea of it being written down the way Premchand would write it. But maybe we can experiment with those forms too. The spellings would be wrong. A lot of things would need to be edited. But as you said, it could be written in a dialect form.
This is where I think a shout out to Pari is very important, because Pari is actually trying to make these into like all these grind mill songs that the women used to sing, and that part of our literature, they're trying to make it an audio visual project. So I think that's something that a lot of now organizations are realizing, that if we don't, we lose our literature. So I think
Can I give a shout out to the Blaft anthology of Tamil Pulp Fiction? That's the one.
Oh my god, thank you somebody.
That's the one book that broke that idea in my mind, that really interesting, engaging, and just page turning fiction is can come from
all places.
From all places. And they did volume 1 and volume 2, which I devoured in like I think a week or so. And then for volume 3 they had a crowdfunding campaign. And I'm very proud to have contributed.
This is the book you picked from Trilogy last time.
I showed you my name on the first page.
Can you repeat the name of the book?
So the publication house is called Blaft, B-L-A-F-T. They do a lot of other stuff as well. They do a lot of graphic novels and these are, so they have three anthologies called the Bluffed Anthology of Tamil Pulp Fiction. These are your very pulpy detective stories, stories about ghosts, stories about possessions, horror stories, stuff that you can find at A.H. Wheeler stores on the railway stations. Stuff that the Pulp Fiction is known for the cheap quality of paper it was written, it's written for the masses. It's consumed by a huge number of people who read Tamil down south, but they've done really great translations of these stories. So there is like an author like Sundar Mohan Raj, I think his name is. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing it. There's Surendra Mohan Pathak, who writes Hindi stories. Again, like, we know James Patterson and these people who come out with, churn out books every year. Surendra Mohan Pathak likes like 3 books every year, and they may not be like, they may not have the most highfalutin concepts. They are more about like train robberies and revenge and stuff like that, but they're so fun to read. So these Tamil Bluffed Tamil Pulp Fiction anthologies, I couldn't stop reading them. One after the other. So they're great. Just check them out. They're all available on Amazon or wherever you find books. The cover illustrations are also really cool. There's one of a very sexy Tamil siren, but she's half robot, half human, with a gun in her hand. Yeah. So,
yeah. Have they played with content also, the way they play with visuals? And
they have, yeah. So like I said, they're all kind of stories. But it'll engage you so well that you can't let go. I think the volume 2 even has a graphic like a comic book adaptation. So they've actually reprinted those pages, but the captions instead of Tamil are in English, translated in English.
Let's take a trip to Trilogy after this.
I was just thinking that today I'm going to be a member there, and this is the first book that I want to pick up. So I'm very happy that
I don't have the copy right now, otherwise I would have lent it to you.
No, it's okay, I'll pick it from there now. Literally be the member and pick those books. I'm so happy that we started with the idea of literary trends, and that trend got imbibed into a text that Abbas recommended. And we have had a good ending to this episode, guys. So on that note, you should definitely check Litnama. New episodes go out every Tuesday. And it is hosted by Lakshmi, that you just listen. You just heard.
And she's amazing. I'm half in love with her. So I'm going to
she listened to the podcast, she'll fall in love.
But probably after this recording, I'm going to hunt, like, basically not hunt you down. You're already in front of me.
Can I ask like one last question? I won't keep very long. So I mean, is the moral of the story, like, it doesn't matter if you read Chetan Bhagat or if you read Durjoy Datta, as long as you're reading something that's coming out of the country?
I guess so. I mean, give offbeat books a chance. I mean, this is what I try to do, like, all my life. And everything is literature. I want to push that message across.
Yeah, I really honestly, I tried to read Don Quixote. 3 page mein give up kar diya, yaar. I'll try.
I also think that a lot of foreign fiction gets more traction because they get adapted into movies and TV shows a lot more. And I think now with streaming services, that's happening for Indian fiction as well. Sacred Games being a very
An example. Stories of Rabindranath Tagore also being one example. But I wish they would also come to other
If they can come to more of offbeat stuff, that would be great.
Okay, guys. So that's it on IVM Likes. We'll see you again next week.
But you can find us on,
you can find me on Instagram at MAD_AD13. You can find Lakshmi on
@literarychills.
Okay, Abbas, you are?
I am at Abbas Momin on Twitter and Abbas Momin 88 on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram. My handle is That Girl Inside the Library. And please send me a DM saying that you heard IBM Likes, because
but last episode you said you wouldn't check DMs.
I mean other DMs.
She changed her mind.
Okay, guys, if you like this podcast, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can listen to us on the IVM Podcast app or ivmpodcast.com. You can follow us on our social media. We are at IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.